Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
Oh, I'm wonderful. How about you?
Outstanding.
Good. Who you got for us?
Well, we have a regular guest, one of our favorites, our favorite grain manager. And what do we call you? You've got, is that your title, grain manager? You're so much more.
I mean, I just like the fact that you said your favorite.
Yeah.
I'm the only one. No, I'm just playing. No, grain merchandiser.
That's right. I mean,
we've got Jason up in Columbus too. Know. So, yeah.
And Jason, if you're out there, we love you too, man.
Jason, you're really our favorite. But you know, since Aaron's here, we got to tell him.
Yeah. I get that often.
Before we jump into the really interesting stuff, the question of the day is, and since Aaron's he's our resident hunter. Him and Glenn are both our resident hunters on the Premier Ag payroll. But what is the most effort or expense that you've ever had to put into a hunting trip?
You know, knock on wood, I've not had to put out the effort or the expense quite like the mountain hunters have. Like anybody that goes out there and chases any of the sheep, elk, anything like that. Like I've not had to do that level of work. The two that come to mind.
Didn't you go out in the ocean and?
Yeah, but I mean,
to shoot a duck.
Yeah, but I mean, we kind of back the boat into the water, Okay. Kind of hop in the boat, and then you putt out there, and it's just like, okay, don't fall out. Like, shoot the duck, don't fall out of the boat. Pretty simple, right? I mean, but no, I think the one that initially came to mind was, it was a long time ago, a lot younger. Now I would die and try to cut corners and ask for help. But I'd been chasing this deer. I called him Stickers, and I finally got a chance. I think it was the week of Thanksgiving or the weekend before, something like that. And anyway, he came in early morning, and I got a shot at him. And to get back to where I was hunting, like, you know, it's a 3/4 mile walk just to get back to that spot. And this ground lays low. They tried to farm it a long, 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 long time ago. And they quit because it's kind of like that black muck ground. So anytime you get any kind of rain at all, there's puddles in the woods. Wow. Like you're walking around, next thing you know, you're knee deep in water because you found an old root wad that is just there. Anyway, so I shoot this deer, and I get excited. You know, I call my dad, and he's like, all right, well, you know, call and send me pictures, you know, when you get there. And I start tracking this thing. Well, it runs the wrong way. So it goes further into this swampy mess.
Oh, my God.
And anybody that hunts, you understand how hard it is to follow blood when the ground's wet, and it gets tricky. Anyway, I finally find this thing, and it's gone a little bit further than I thought it did. And so by this point, my feet are drenched because I've already buried both my feet in water. Like I'm just, but you know, I'm in my early 20s. I don't really care. I don't even know if I was 21 yet. I don't really care at this point. I'm just, you know, trucking around. Finally find it. So to drag this thing out, because the property I was on, you could not have any motorized equipment on it. Like it was just heel toe power, baby. That's it.
Wow.
So I find this thing, drag it out to a creek ditch, and then I walk back to the truck. So I walk, you know, at that point, probably all roundabout tracking them and all that stuff. Walk a mile back to the truck, ditch some of my stuff, go back to him, drag him to the edge of the property where I could get stuff too. So I probably took it a half mile. By the time I finally finished that day, I was done. I was spent. It wasn't a whole lot of work other than just walking and dragging him that little bit. But the next day, the reason I bring this story up is my feet hurt so bad. And I'm like, I can't imagine what Vietnam was like for people. Like they talk about foot rot and all that. Like I can't imagine, because just after what little effort I put out, it freaking sucked. 3 days later, the entire bottom of both my feet start to peel.
Oh,
I mean, I'm talking big toe to the heel, baby. Everything on the bottom of my foot just started peeling off because it finally like loosened up and got hard, and then it just started peeling off.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh, this sucks.
So you got jungle rot in like November deer season.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. So, but again, it wasn't like a whole lot of effort. It was just the afterwards that
sucked. Sounds like a lot of effort.
Yeah. Probably the worst effort that I ever put in was, we were in Southern Illinois, and I was young. I was, I think I had my driver's license. No, I didn't. I didn't even have my driver's license yet. I was junior high. It was a long time ago. My dad shoots a deer. And for all you hunters, like, you know what it's like when you hit a deer high or in the, like, right in the ball sock or shoulder socket with a bow. No blood. And the animal's fine. Like, it ends up surviving. Well, we do our due diligence. The problem was, is I started to get sick. So I'm crawling hands and knees trying to find blood drops. Finally, my dad like looks back, sees me. He goes, nope, we're done. So we get out of there finally. But yeah, that was probably the most effort I actually put in was crawling around hands and knees, dry heaving, trying to find blood.
Oh my
blood.
Gosh.
You know, didn't find the deer.
I'm just not that hardcore hunter, I guess.
Yeah, I tell you.
Yeah.
Can you think of any, Jeff?
Yeah, mine was probably, it was right after 9/11. And me and some guys, we had an elk hunt in Montana. And so we're going to leave like the 1st of October to go out to Montana, go on this elk hunt. Airlines aren't flying. So we're sitting here going, okay, how are we going to do this? That's a long drive. And so we, you know, it was just, I guess all the, you know, long story short, they end up opening up, they started flying again and we made it, but we started thinking, okay, can we still fly with guns? I mean, are they going to restrict everything? So that was probably the most effort we put into is just, how are we going to get there?
Yeah.
Cause it was Northwest Montana. It was just like, we're going to have like a couple days of driving. We're going to be out there for a week hunting, a couple days getting home. Our wives are going to leave us all.
Yeah. Turns into a 2 week hunting
yeah.
trip.
Instead yeah. So of it was, that was probably our most, the one that took the most effort, just worrying about how we're going to get there. So
it would be, oh, mine's fairly simple, but, I remember it was back, it's probably back in the '90s and, you know, I've been out to Stuttgart several times on some duck hunts out in there and a lot huge duck, waterfowl flyway. And, you know, I was like, there's no reason I can't go out there and hunt public ground. I had a brother-in-law that was stationed out there in Little Rock area. And I was like, that'd be easy. We'll go out there and I'll take a buddy or two and we'll just go out there and go hunting on some public ground. And so we got there and of course, you know, I was back before GPSs and he wasn't sure about drive distances. And we had found the state park and we're getting there and it was already just about to get light. We was trying to find an area and some flooded timber to hunt in. And we took off like maniacs, just went straight out into this, you know, thousands and thousands of acres of woods. And just, you know, we had our waders on, so it was all comfortable, but we was going through about 6 inches of water all the way out through there. And we could start to hear people shoot, you know, if you've been in Stuttgart, it sounds like a war zone. And we find a good spot opened up, you know, we're out there all by ourselves and we're standing about a foot of water and, you know, the ducks are coming in and it just had a great morning and, finished up and it's like, okay, well, let's head on back. It's about 10 o'clock and everybody starts off in a different direction. Sure enough. And it was overcast. And thank goodness that one of our guys and found a compass in his pocket and we finally ended up getting back on and found an old deer trail back to the truck. But we stomped around in that woods for probably an hour getting ourselves back out of there because we had literally just ran with our guns and dogs and everything else, waders. So, you know, you're not looking around trying to.
Yeah, no landmarks.
But when we said, let's go, and everybody started going a different direction, that was a weird feeling. And we made it out of there. One guy, though, he twisted his back, and he was one of the older guys of the bunch, and he had twisted his back. And the next day in the hotel room, he just couldn't. He's like, I can't go. And we're like, we're just going to leave you with the pizza because we got to go. You know, so we propped him up and propped him up with we left him a 6-pack of beer and a pizza and took off.
That story just makes me think of the old cartoons. Which way did he go, George? Which way did he go?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I bet the dogs were just looking at you like, you idiots, the truck's that way.
Yeah, they were. One of the guys is like looking at them. I was like, I don't think the dog's going to help. I don't know.
It's just like, all right, we're going to the next hunting hole.
Yeah, they don't care. They're happy. Well, Aaron, tell us, we just had a WASDE report come out just last week.
Yeah.
So you want to give us the highlights or lowlights?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, I mean, I want to say the long overdue WASD report, right? Because the government shut
down. Government shut down. Yeah.
So we had one in September. Didn't get the October one. Had no official export sales numbers. We had inspection numbers, right? Because we can kind of see those. But we didn't have any verified data through the month of October, kind of an important month for the U.S., you know, you would think.
So it just, I'm not a government employee, but they just didn't do it. I mean, they didn't go to work or it just didn't happen or.
No, I don't want to say they didn't go to work, but they were moving money around, right? Trying to keep certain pieces open and things like that. And the WASD report was not one of them that they moved the money around. Now, before whatever Congress finally did to come to an agreement to shine some light on that this might come to an end, the USDA, they had moved some money around to say, no, we are for sure going to do the November report, but instead of November 10th, we're going to push it back to November 14th, Friday. So, and then all of a sudden, three, 4 days later, then the news broke that, hey, there might be a breakthrough, shutdown may be coming to an end. So it all kind of came together all at once. We're still dealing with a backlog of information. I mean, they put out a schedule of how these export sales are going to be reported. Now, the market feels, going off the inspection numbers, they feel like they kind of have an idea.
What's an inspection number?
Literally the export inspections. So Jeff would know way more about this than I would, just dealing with the barges and all that and cargo vessels going out. But
okay.
Yeah. So they knew what inspections were going on as far as vessels leaving the U.S. So we had a pretty good idea that corn exports were going to be high. Market felt very comfortable with that. They just didn't know how high or what that looked like. And a lot of this comes back to this new world screw worm, I think is what it, you know. Anyway, you can't move Mexican beef across the border into the U.S. Well, and what I didn't know until all of this kind of came out, you know, I'm looking at the export numbers, seeing Mexico buy a bunch, but like, then it dawns on me. And then I read something else about it. It's like, okay, cattle start young in Mexico and then come across and finish out on feedlots in Western United States. When they can't finish them out, what do they need? They need more feed. Hence, we've got more corn exports, right? So it's a bad deal what the beef market's doing and all that of, you know, they can't move it across state lines or across international lines. But for the corn market, man, it has really buoyed this thing. Now, the caveat to this is if they're not getting finished out in the U.S., what probably goes down, right, eventually? The U.S. feed usage number eventually probably goes down because we're just not finishing out the cattle like we thought we were going to because it's still stuck in Mexico. So it kind of, I'm not saying it's a one for one, but all this hype about dropping the U.S. yield for corn at some point could be offset at this point because the feed usage number is probably going to come down. So that's
domestic.
That's domestic. Yeah. Domestic feed usage number. Yeah. So when this report finally came out, one of my fears, everybody kept calling me. It's like, well, what do you think's going to happen? It's like, well, you know, it's not really my job to know where the market's going to go, right? You know, I'm a risk manager, basis trader, and I just try to help customers manage the risk, try to make some educated decisions, and try to do the best we can. But if I put the speculation hat on, the one thing that made me really nervous was the entire market felt very on one side of the boat of this yield needs to come down. And it needs to come down pretty hard. And I just felt like, man, we've gone so long without any information out of the USDA. And you hear everybody talk about, well, I don't trust them. They don't know what they're doing. But like, yeah, but when you go without the information, what happens? Like you get nervous, right? And the market's just like, I don't know. And when it finally comes out, that's what the market trades. So we could have got on the wrong side of the boat of this thing. And next thing you know, the boat's capsizing. And so that's what I was nervous going into this. And so they finally came out Friday, November 14th, and they did drop the yield. However, they did not drop it nearly as much as what the trade thought. I mean, the average trade guess was 184, which means that there's people even guessing lower than that. And so but they dropped it 3/4 of a bushel down to 186. Still talking record yield by almost 7 bushels. It's like the former record was 179.3. We're talking 186. Does that number eventually come down some more? Probably. But that comes into where the feed usage number on this report wasn't messed with it at all. So in the future, that feed usage number may come down to offset that yield coming down a little bit. Again, we're kind of looking at this thing, trying to see where this thing's going. Not so much. This isn't exact. Nobody knows, right? This is just trying to take educated information from all the countryside that we're getting and trying to push it onto this and say, this is where this thing might go.
Let me ask you real quick. Mm-hmm. So you talked about a backlog of the information while the government shut down.
Yeah.
Going forward, did they see any delays in future WASDE reports?
Not that I'm aware of. Okay. But they keep throwing out all this, like we were supposed to have a harvest progress report, right? Or crop progress yesterday afternoon. Well, they sent out stuff saying that, well, that's not going to happen. But then I get something this morning saying that it did happen. So it's like, I don't know where we're at in this thing. It's cumbersome. And I'm not pinning this on them. A lot of them were working without getting paid.
Yeah, that's true.
So by no means am I going out, USDA, you suck. You don't know what. No, you guys are trying to do the best you can. And that was another big question of, with the amount of backlog and how short of a span that they have to get this done, how accurate is the information? So all of that's still swirling in the marketplace. One thing that they did find was they lowered the feed usage on the old crop. So that was another 200 million, I think, of basically bushels that immediately hit our carryout position. So with the record yield, and they didn't mess with the acreage any, our beginning stocks went up 207 million because of the feed usage number from 24-25 going down. In total, our ending stocks for this new crop potential went up 44 million. So we're still over a 2.1 billion bushel carryout with a stocks to use rate of 13.3%. We've not seen that since 2019.
What is the trade looking forward to see if they can, we always talk about how, hey, we think this was baked into the report. That's why we didn't see the market move one way or the other. As what are they baking into the next report? Is it too early to tell yet, or do you have an idea?
I think too early to tell on the yield part now, because everyone had, on the report day, corn was down 11 cents. And it was a little worse than that, but it kind of fought back to, so we finished somewhere down 11. Now we've kind of came back in the last couple of days post report. I'd have to look to see exactly where we're at. We're at least back within a nickel or so where we started. For these futures, the market had baked in that exports were going to go up, yield was going to come down. And I think it kind of baked in the fact that the feed usage for old crop was probably going to go down a little bit. So I think they kind of felt that out. Now going forward, it's going to be, okay, what do we think? Do we think the yield's going to continue to go down? I think it does. I think that's where the market's, I think it's kind of got that baked into the price. So, Jeff, whenever you say, does the market think it's already baked in, or is it trading like it's baked in? That lends itself towards, we can get caught on the wrong side of this thing again. Whereas if they keep finding out that no, the yield is there, it's not going to get sub 180, it's going to stay in the mid 180s, then that means this market is overpriced. And if they don't lower it enough to offset the feed usage number going down, then our ending stocks or carryout position just continues to grow, which means we have more corn left over for going forward. And so, transitioning into beans, that kind of plays into that. You hear a lot about the soybean to corn ratio. 2.5, it's like, I don't know, you flip a quarter. Plant beans, plant corn. It really doesn't financially make a difference, right, on the futures front. Right now we're sitting around 2.4. So that lends itself to say plant corn, because you're going to come out better on that front than you are on beans. Which, like I said, if we can't use up this corn that we have, and we're talking over 2 billion bushel carry out stocks, right? And this is not a production issue. We're riding on the high of exports doing their job. Right now, we are well ahead of pace to meet the export number. And they adjusted that a little higher too. But if at any point we start to falter on that, or they start to kind of you know, go trend line on the export data, then this thing could get a little ugly on corn. I'm not saying that it is, but it could. Because, you know, like I said, 13.3% stocks to use rate for corn, U.S., that looks, you know, that means that we've got plenty of corn. We're not worried about anything. Well, when you look at the corn market in a world scenario, we're at 19%. And so that's definitely lower than where we've been the last for a long time. So the world needs corn, or is, I don't want to say uncomfortable, but it's starting to become a little bit more uncomfortable with the corn situation. But then you start getting into the whole corn and wheat debacle. You know, can you feed wheat instead of corn if corn gets too high priced? So I think the world stage right now is kind of helping buoy the U.S. corn market right this second. But then when you get into the beans, it's kind of like a whole, it's kind of like the opposite, really. You know, you start talking, I've been on here before talking about beans, when you get a stocks to use rate around 5-6%, it starts to get a little uncomfortable. Well, the U.S. stocks to use rate right now projected for 25-26, 6.7%. That's tighter than last year, tighter than the year before. We've not been in a 6% and it's since 22-23 crop. But then when you look at the world chart for beans, I mean, we're getting into, I mean, we've been in the 20% for the last 3 years now, since 23. And so worldwide, the world has plenty of beans. The U.S. is a little tight. And I think some of that is coming from, you know, this is a Tuesday that we're having this podcast, November 17th, they came out with the crush report and it was record crush for the U.S. So that just blew the top off from beans yesterday. I mean, I think they were up 30 some cents at some point. So we're doing stuff with beans domestically. And I think that eventually gets even more, right? With the soybean oil and the biodiesel and things like that trying to come online. There's hope that we end up using more beans domestically, like corn. You know, we use the vast majority of corn is used domestically. We're trying to use more beans domestically. That way we don't have to rely on China like we have to right this second.
Yeah.
And so in the bean report, they dropped yield. It wasn't as far off as far as what the market thought on that one. I mean, I think the average trade may have been in the 52 range. They dropped it a half a bushel to 53. So it's not like it was like big earth shattering news. The biggest thing that we wanted to see on beans is we want to see the actual trade deal go through and see actual sales to China and them actually take delivery of it. And right now we're going to have a really hard time meeting that 12 million metric ton mark in the time frame that they said. I mean, we're not even close to it. So then, you know, this bean, regardless of what this report says, there's just this big gorilla in the room of, do you trust China to actually buy our stuff? And what I've been telling guys is like, if history tells us one thing, and China is a low-cost buyer, and so when beans rallied domestic, when U.S. beans rallied, that does not help us, even though they dropped the tariff. If you look at CNF and all that, you can still buy beans cheaper in Brazil. And then you have Argentina stepping into it because they're trying to back their whole fiscal issues down there by dropping the export tax on themselves. And all of a sudden they ship out, I forgot how many millions of tons of beans, but they opened it up and all of a sudden beans are leaving Argentina to go to China during our time of frame that we needed to move them. And so there's this really wild dynamic going on right now of, I don't think anybody truly knows where this bean situation is going to end up at. Personally, I don't trust that they're actually going to follow through and they're going to buy stuff. Again, history says they are low price buyers. And right now they're going to continue to buy from Brazil, a country that they have pumped in billions of dollars into their infrastructure. Why would they not buy from them when they've invested so heavily there and they can buy it cheaper? They're going to buy that until they can't, and then they will step in and buy some token bushels from the U.S. farm level, right? And so a lot of this is projecting stuff out there, right? I mean, so nobody knows. This thing could turn around and, you know, they could buy way more than what they said they were going to. And then next thing you know, we're back to $15 beans. Not that I'm saying that's where we're going, but you get the point of we just don't know where this thing's going because it all relies on them actually following through on their purchase agreement. And I'm sure somewhere in the fine print it is like, well, we'll buy all this if it is fiscally responsible for us to buy them. And if it's not, we're not going to. But somehow we probably didn't see that. Because the other thing going on in the Chinese market right now is their crush margins, they suck. So why would they buy beans from us if their margins aren't any good on crushing? They're going to buy the cheapest bean that they can to offset the fact that their crush margins aren't any good. And if they've got all these cargoes and vessels coming in from Brazil at a record pace, they've got a gap to fill. But at some point, I mean, they've got state reserves. It's a whole different ballgame over there that I don't even understand completely. I don't think anybody truly knows either because they keep it so tight. They don't let information out. So I don't want to be all doom and gloom because the benefit here is we've seen over $1 a bushel rally in beans. So this is a great opportunity, regardless of where you think this thing is going. This has been a great opportunity. I mean, literally, if you put beans in the bin in the beginning of October, in 30 days, the market is willing to pay you $1 more.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like it's made you money. Like it takes some of the risk off the table, right? Because these rates are not looking like they're coming down anytime real fast. Inputs are, Jeff, I mean, you could talk about that. They're not great.
No, that's, we got another year ahead of us. It's going to be, tough. So,
yeah. So it's like, this has been an opportunity to get some extra money that wasn't there a month ago. And corn, it's like the little brother. It's just following the leader right now. Beans have a great day. Corn's going to have an okay day. Beans have a horrible day. Corn's going to struggle. And that's just the market that we're in right now. Because the U.S. balance sheet says we have plenty of corn. Soybean to corn ratio says probably plant more corn. It's a weird dynamic right now going on. And we've got enough of each. Beans are a little tighter, but that's a picture that we have right this second. If the export number continues to get trimmed on the bean front, we could end up being okay. But the crush number could come up. Who knows? So
that's good to stop and just think of it in those terms is that, in 30 days you made a dollar and we forget those things. We tend to just look at the last day or the last 2 days or the today and don't think about that's awesome. I mean, to have that kind of carry.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean that it has been a very welcomed thing to see on the bean front. It's not like I'm sitting out here as a commercial elevator saying, oh, I hate this. I don't want bean prices to go up. Like I want them to stay subdued. I want to buy as cheap as I can. Like that's not how this works.
Yeah.
Like I'm not out here trying to steal $8 beans or anything like that. Like I had more fun buying those $13, $14, $15 beans than I do buying $9, $10, $11 beans. Right. So, we work at it as a team as far as from your local elevator, from Premier and the customer front. Like we're trying to work together. Your goals and our goals align a lot of the time. It's just trying to get that right combination to fit both of our needs at the right time. And, it seems weird. We're basically finished up this fall harvest. I'm looking at next fall. I mean, we had a target for a 1075 for fall delivered beans next year. It hit.
Nice.
And so it's up even a little bit more. And, the hard part is the psychology part of it is it's like, I should have set the target for $11. But 1075 is a lot better than where we were a month ago.
Sure enough.
Yeah, I think what you were thinking back in August going into harvest. I mean, there were guys that probably weren't looking forward to harvest.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's small increments, right? We're out there, small increments. But corn, I think we'd be in like the 430s, 450 range, somewhere in there for next fall. So it's not all doom and gloom. There's opportunities out there. On the west side of our territory, in the Lagodi area, man, we saw harvest improve 30 or more cents in harvest. That doesn't happen, right? And so we've got these pockets where basis is telling one story where yield probably ought to come down And then, but if you go two hours in a different area, you've got basis that held at that harvest level or dropped some saying, yeah, no, we got the bushels. Hmm. Like, we have them. Don't worry about it. We'll cover you. And then we have the Southeast market, which I think I've talked about before. They're having one of the best crops ever that they've ever done on the back of one of the worst ones that they've ever had. And so that's a huge Southeast, you know, that Southeast poultry market is huge. That's a huge end user of corn. So that the whole story going into this fall was, how far back does that delay trains needing to go into that market? They still need corn. It's not like they produce enough to completely exnade the Midwest corn belt, right? They still have to have it. It's just a matter of, well, I may not need it at the end of September. I may need it at the end of October. But when the pipeline is used to moving those bushels at the end of September, then it starts to trickle back, which is why you saw some of those basis levels out in the plains for beans. Like, those beans hit rail and go to the Pacific Northwest. Well, when they don't have any cargo vessels sold to China, you get some of those letters that were sent out saying, hey, we're not sure, like, we're taking beans, but we're not sure what we're going to do once we fill up, because we don't have anywhere to go with it. And so right now the Pacific Northwest has a pretty good book of corn going out. So does the Gulf. So it's not all bad. Like, there are some highlights. It's just, when we have these good days or this good month of bean rallies, or even corn hanging around as strong as it has been, it gives you an opportunity to take some risk off the table.
That's good.
Yeah.
Jeff, I don't know what else to add. That's
probably a good point.
I know. Too. Aaron, we always appreciate your insight. And I know our listeners all do too. I learned something new every time you're on. So I think one of the things I did pick up was just the importance of putting those targets in. And the second thing was just the, and you say it, and you're not interested in buying $8 or $9. It doesn't matter. That's not how it works. And $13, $14, $15 beans is just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So yep.
If the market wants to pay you that, I'd love to be up there.
That's right.
But it's just when the market's not there, it's hard.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground. Thank you very much, Aaron, for coming back in and making the trip over here.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All right. Well, thank you all very much.